Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday, the 23rd of January. Very nice to have you with us on this Friday morning, a cold Friday morning, but it's clear and everything all right there, Ray? Oh, yeah, very good. We're getting mics.
Going back to my days as a roadie for Leonard Skinner. Adjusting some volumes here.
That's all right. Yeah. Do you need me to cough?
No. Okay. Nope.
Just checking.
Sweet home Alabama.
We'll play Freebird in a little while after the break.
All right. Let us introduce our panel. You've already heard Ray Graff on and off mic. Ray, good morning. Thank you very much for being here.
Nice to be here. How are your levels? Are they okay? Because I can adjust them.
No, yes.
Oh, you're fine? All right, good.
I seem to be fine. And if you're talking about my volume of my headphone, that's fine. Other levels, we'll see.
Serotonin.
That's right. Yeah. Alan Shartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
What did the Lone Ranger say?
Something about a silver bullet.
Hi-o, silver.
Yeah.
Hi-o, silver.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, yeah. Well, we're going to talk about all that.
Yeah.
Aren't we?
Oh, yeah. I get his point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I like the Times Union headline.
Tainted silver?
Tarnished silver.
Very clever.
You didn't come up with that one?
No. We were debating whether we should say the silver lining here is that it brings attention to the corruption issue, but that would have been too much.
That's a long headline.
Yeah, it's a long headline. But you can say it. When I ask you, what do you make of it, Mike, you can start off with that.
Okay. Got it already.
All right. Pretend you didn't say it.
Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union, and it's a delight to have him here. And thank you very much for filling in for all the other people who can't be here. Okay. Let's start with the silver story. I have to say, we talked about this issue yesterday, Alan. The speaker turns himself in. He's arrested, and then the press conference in the afternoon, where Preet Bharara, the prosecutor, federal prosecutor, goes down this list, and it's stunning. I mean, it is a shocking, stunning list of crimes and of just every horrible thing that you can imagine done financially by a public official, and it certainly seems and obviously Speaker Silver will have his day in court, but it certainly seems like they have a very, very expansive and strong case here.
You know, Joe, I'm not sure it's so strong.
Really?
In other words, if you get this for me, I'll give you this, and you say it into a microphone, you got it. If he didn't pay his taxes on all this money, you got it. But, you know, this is business as usual. One of the reasons I am so grateful to Preet Bharara, to be honest with you, is that he puts out there the way Albany operates. And I think this is going to make a fundamental change. Look, they're all going to support. There's an old story about Joe Stalin. I don't know if you know it. It was in the Khrushchev book, Remembrance, his autobiography. And they said they all got called into his room, and he was dead. He was dying. He was nine-tenths out of it. And all of a sudden, his foot twitched. So everybody got very scared.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's going on here. His whole group is supporting him, but they've got to know that that this is up now. That things are up, and that things are so bad in Albany that this is the way these people are feathering their own nests. And when Bharara said at the end of his press conference yesterday, and more to come, I'll bet you could hear the clinking of knees and toes all the way to Montreal. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, because if they have, and here's what I think. I think they've moved the line. In other words, up to now, this has been okay. People knew what was going on one way or another. It was okay. People brought you business because you were an assemblyman. If you had a choice of going to Joe Donahue, the lawyer, or to Shelley Silver, what do you think you're going to do and get something out of it? I've talked about that for years. But now Preet Bharara has done something extraordinary. He has moved the line.
So I want to get back to this, just this whole idea of the fact that, You think that some of this isn't as strong? I mean, and that this is business as usual. I mean, I maybe call me naive, but I and people have actually.
Yeah.
But when you look at this, millions of dollars in bribes and kickbacks, that he was asserting that he was a simple personal injury lawyer who represented ordinary people. Federal prosecutors said his reported law practice was a fiction, one he created to mask about $4 million in payoffs. I mean, this was going on for well over a decade, at least. That he was accused of steering real estate developers to a law firm that paid him kickbacks. He was accused of funneling state grants to a doctor who referred asbestos claims to a second law firm that employed Mr. Silver and paid him for fees for referring clients. I mean, this is all very, very and I was just going through the New York sure. Times graph of basically what Preet Bharara went through yesterday of, you know, they say follow the money, and they were kind of showing where the money was going. And my goodness.
I think you're right, Alan, that the defense will be that some of this is technically legal, that if you're an attorney and you're also a legislator with great influence, like Assemblyman Silver is, it brings business to your law firm, and hiring you to be in the law firm in itself will bring business to the law firm without you doing anything. And that would probably be his argument for his position at White's and Luxembourg. But there was a whole other law firm where he was sending business that he never even reported, and that may be the technicality, sort of like not paying the taxes that this hangs on. He did not disclose, as required by law, this relationship, and even if it is as dishonest as it seems to all us lay people, even if it is technically legal to drive business to your law firm, you have to disclose, and that may be the gotcha.
You know, there's an old, my favorite book in politics, I always have my students read it and they love it because it's very, very short, Plunkett of Tammany Hall, in which he says there's honest graft and there's dishonest graft.
That's
right. The line has always been that this is honest graft. You know, don't go steal and don't go say anything into a microphone. But this is honest graft. I'm not defending it. I don't like it. I hate it.
Oh, no, that's not the issue. It's whether it technically violates the law. And the latter may do that. Yeah.
Well, the latter that you just talked about is a state law, not a federal law. Right, Mike? So, you know, and guess who wrote that law? They did. Shelley wrote it. And I guarantee you that the consequences of having not put down something on that disclosure form is very different from having broken a federal law and having been, you know, basically a crook, which is Shelley Silver is approved of. You know, I'm sorry to say this because everybody's got a Shelley story this morning. But Shelley hasn't been on our air for a long time now. He used to come on quite frequently. We were proud to have the speaker on. And you may remember he would start out by saying, "Hi, I'm Sheldon Silver." But when the Rapfogle thing broke, you all remember Willie Rapfogle right. down at the Metropolitan Council.
Speaker Silver's wife was an associate of Rapfogle who was stealing
Michael,
money.
Michael, you're getting to be like my wife. You give the punchline before I'm done with the story, you know. That's right, because Rapfogle stole all the money. They carted him off to prison fast, no trial. But his wife is the chief of staff to Shelley Silver. And when the FBI came to the house and they looked and they found all that money, guess what? They said to Mrs. Rapfogle, "Did you know this money was here?" "No, I didn't know that." "Well, my wife can tell me where every shoe in the house is under anything." So this is really interesting because I think that's where it all sort of began. And now I think a lot of people are wondering if Shelley has to save himself, whether he will disclose everything else that he knows about what's going on over there. And that could, of course, be a very interesting moment. But because I talked about the Rapfogle thing on the air a lot, all of a sudden, no more Shelley.
It is interesting when we think of there's a lot of obviously facets of this and a lot of direction that we can go in. But I guess I was interested in just the moment. Actually, let me stop. We'll take a break. I just realized we're 23 minutes in. So let's take a break. We'll come back, and then we'll go into some of the other issues before we hit the news at the bottom of the hour. Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics, barrypricearchitecture.com. And Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing nature gifts, bird seed, bird feeders, and more to help create a backyard refuge, wbu.com/Saratoga Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Friday morning. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Mike Spain are here, and we welcome you, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And Alan, so the question I was going to ask right before the break is, it took me a long time yesterday to find coverage of the governor's response.
Well,
it took me a long time. Even in the I don't believe, and at least in the coverage that I read in the New York Times, there was no official word from the governor's office on this, and it took several sources before I finally found out that he indeed I believe it was a New York Post, it was a
Daily News
editorial board that he spoke out. So and was fairly mum on it, saying he didn't know the full extent of it and didn't want to say much more.
Well, look, Preet Bharara, the fighting U.S. attorney, is hardly a friend of Andrew Cuomo. And you may remember that when Cuomo mysteriously ended the Moreland Act Commission, Bharara went nuts. He really got angry and grabbed all of the files from the Moreland Act Commission and went to town with them, and this is how the silver thing apparently has unfolded. This is how we see it. Although in the FBI agent, if you read the full dossier that they handed out yesterday, the FBI agent made it quite clear that this investigation had been going on for a long time. There is a story. I don't like to quote the Post, but you know, there's a story that Silver used to send money to Morgenthau when he was the DA in New York, and for his campaign, and if the check was cash, he knew he wasn't being investigated. I don't fully believe it, to tell you the truth. It's one of those sort of
he may have been a legitimate contributor to Morgenthau's reelection campaigns.
Exactly, Michael. Andrew Cuomo has got to be a little bit worried here, because if Preet Bharara is going after the whole kit and caboodle in Albany, there have been an awful lot of deals made, including giving a certain amount of discretionary money from the governor to the speaker to give out. And if you're following some of these stories about, you know, Columbia University mesothelioma expert gets money for his charity research, and at the same time channels people to Silver's law firm, that's interesting stuff.
And he's talking.
Well, yeah, no, look, if you're a Columbia University medical professor, you know, there is a greater responsibility than playing ball with the Speaker of the New York State Assembly. And I don't think it was, I am sure, the last thing this guy ever thought was that he was going to be involved in any kind of crooked enterprise here. I'm sure that what happens is these people get in on it and they say, well, that's just the way it is. That's what you have to do.
when we just have about a minute now, and I don't know if you want to do any of the letters real quick. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Joe, my machine here isn't really working on letters. So you, okay. Tom says, I don't know what Tom says. So Tom says, I wonder if Shelley has something. Do you see that,
Joe? I wonder if Shelley has been talking to his Republican brethren on how to be corrupt, was Tom's comment.
That's right. And are you sure that I have a feeling this is from Ann in Rexford says, good morning. How dirty does Cuomo look now? That's what it says. And there's the famous Al Smith quote, which says, thanks to Jim Dwyer of The New York Times, upon seeing a law student studying in a law library, Al Smith says, there. Smith supposedly says, is a young man studying how to take a bribe and call it a fee. I love that one.
Okay, enough lawyer jokes.
Yeah.
Is that...
My goodness.
Is that it? All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, and we will talk about a few more aspects of this and other stories as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Friday morning. And it's our, thank God it's Friday edition of the roundtable panel, and it's very nice to have you with us. We welcome you as well, roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. We want to talk about some other things here, but before we do that, let's ask the big question. The elephant in the room is, should the speaker resign? And the New York Times has editorialized on this. The Times Union has editorialized on this. And the New York Times believes that the speaker should step down. There are, of course, many, many Republicans who are calling for the speaker to step down. But meanwhile, he does have the support of most Assembly Democrats. Alan, what do you make of it?
I don't think he's going to step down. Unless, here you say the elephant in the room. Preet Bharara is the guy who knows what they've really got. They made it clear in this information that they gave out yesterday that this was just done in order to justify basically the arrest. If in fact they've got real solid stuff, then he'll resign, I think. And it won't be pretty. We know that when public officials have resigned in the past, it looks very bad. It's the end of their political career, usually. And I don't think he wants to go out that way. And I think if he thinks he can beat it, as Joe Bruno thought he could beat it, he'll stay.
But, bro, Joe Bruno did leave the legislature when he was under federal investigation facing an indictment.
Mike, if you remember, it took quite a while.
But he hadn't even been indicted yet.
And, yeah, but he knew, his feeling was, you know, they had him, I think, and that they might leave him alone, I think, I don't know, if he resigned.
Well, the other question is, should he step aside as the speaker, stop being one of the three men in the room, and let, I guess, his deputy, you know, the majority leader, Joe Morelli, you know, step in there. What should he do there, Alan?
I think he won't. Unless, and that's, you know, to talk about this is and be uninformed is that we don't really know what Bharara has. I mean, I think that's the question. If Shelley thinks he's a goner, he'll get out, as you just corrected me. Joe Bruno did. And Joe Bruno was eventually found not guilty. Now,
that's because the Supreme Court changed the definition of dishonest services during
Shmesh, but he was found not guilty.
Yes, he was found not guilty, and that was a different case. In this particular case, they won an indictment, a federal indictment, after the law changed based on the new version of the law. So
Theft of honest services.
Yeah, services. Now, how can the Assembly Speaker, Silver, participate in a discussion over whether the legislature is going to tighten ethics laws and and require more disclosure, more transparency, which is what the good government groups are pushing for and have been pushing for. How can he even legitimately engage in that conversation now?
That's easy. It's called chutzpah. You know,
chutzpah.
Nice.
Spoken like a Catholic. Well done.
You just do it. You do it. If we were all thinking this thing through together, all of us, the listeners and everybody else, if I'm in the legislature right now, on the one hand, I might say, oh boy, this is, and Preet Bharara would be the big winner here. This would be a great time to really tighten the rules so that they mean something. We'll come up with an ethics legislation that will knock your eyes out. You could go back and you could read my columns from years ago in which I said they would build a statue to Speaker Silver if they did that. And he has the opportunity to go out as one of the greatest figures in Albany, but he didn't do that. And maybe that's because it's just too rotten at the core. If you change the rules now and the whole system stinks and is rotten, then a lot of people go down. And I think it's substantial that it's probable that they can't do it, even if they'd like to and know it's in their best interest to do it.
Let me ask you one more question. The Assembly Democrats got together and came out around 10:30 to express their full support of the speaker, you know, and that they have every confidence that he'll be, going to continue to fill his role with distinction and that he'll be exonerated. That was like at 10:30 in the morning. Bharara went on, I think, at 1 or 1:30, and it was broadcast live across the state. Do you think if they had waited till after Preet Bharara's press conference, they might have modified their stance a little bit?
No.
Really?
No, okay. I don't think so, because as I say, let's say there are four guys in a room and they held up a bank and somebody gets caught, right? Probably a bad analogy. But what are they going to do? What are they going to do? Change the rules? I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is there are too many people in on it. Now that Bharara has moved the line, which he has, Mike, I think that's the whole point. He's moved the line. So what used to be honest graft is now dishonest graft. Now that he's moved that line, there are a lot of guys with their knees shaking. 25% of that legislature are lawyers, and many of them are, quote, consultants. And this is the way they've been making a living for a long time.
But what else are you going to say? You have to say the presumption of innocence, and we can't throw this guy under the bus just yet. He's not guilty, not found guilty of anything.
Senator Smith is on trial right now for allegations against him, but he remains in the state Senate, right?
Remember what I told you about Stalin's toe twitching? You know.
Oh, that old chestnut.
We love that story.
See, I think the problem here is that there are an awful lot of people. Now, Bill de Blasio, who is the mayor of New York, is a big Silver fan. They had all kinds of things going together in terms of Silver representing de Blasio's interests in the legislature. And remember that that de Blasio and the governor, no matter what anybody tells you and how many times they hug, these guys are fierce, rivals. So this thing has a chain reaction throughout the whole system.
You can't tell much from a hug these days, can you?
Or a toe twitch.
Or a toe obviously. Twitch. Nice. Let's go on to other subjects, and let's talk about the White House and the weird position they're being put on with the Prime Minister of Israel being invited to Washington in March to address a joint session of Congress. The White House, citing the Israeli election, says that the president and Netanyahu will not meet. So the question is, how did this come about? What is happening here behind the scenes? And what is this supposed to represent, Alan?
Well, I'm not happy. I'll be honest with you. I think this is not good. The president of the United States is supposed to be in charge of our foreign policy. They have every right in the Congress to have him come. But when in history have they ever not told the president what they're going to do and just left him to twist out there? So that is really bad news. Now, if I'm Netanyahu and I have to do business with Obama, Do I really think I can come in and change policy towards Iran, which this is all about? Do I really think that's a good idea? I don't think so. Now, look, everybody knows or should know that I have always believed in the right of Israel to exist. I don't like the fact that people want to push them into the sea, that people want to kill them. To me, maybe it's because of who I am or how I was brought up, but Israel is sacrosanct. But this is a lousy deal, and I think that Netanyahu shouldn't have done it, and I think they look small for having tried to embarrass the president on foreign policy.
Anybody else want to weigh in on this? No?
The branches of government are equal in theory, right?
I think, Ray, I know where you're going with this. I think that they are, but I think that the Constitution assigns various responsibilities. And I think it's the responsibility, I think we all know it, of the president of the United States to set foreign policy while he's president or she's president. And I think what happened here is that they've blurred that line. I think it's a real insult that they didn't call the president and say, this is what we're going to do. There was no contact at all. And this is really his job.
Does his excuse make sense? Does that hold any water?
Whose excuse?
Obama.
The president.
Yeah. Oh, you mean his excuse that he's not going to talk to him because he's in a presidential election? Because Netanyahu's in it? Nah, I think everybody knows that he's really ticked off. And I think properly so. This is the new Obama. This is a man who says what he thinks. Israel, of course, is a huge issue in the United States. Most politicians know it. We just saw Andrew Cuomo taking his trip. Most people know it, and it's an important and strategic ally of the United States. But this is a mistake.
We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Bridgeside Grill, Sunderland Center, Massachusetts, offering lunch and dinner daily and brunch on weekends, featuring seasonal outdoor dining, member of CISA since 2007. BridgesideGrill.com for menu. And TSL, Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York, screening Little Accidents, Awake, The Humbling, Actress, and broadcasting NT Live's Treasure Island, the Met Opera Encore of The Merry Widow, and the Bolshoi Ballet's Swan Lake, timeandspace.org.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about another issue, and we begin with a really interesting story in the Times Union about the youngest member of Congress, yes?
Yes, youngest woman elected to Congress ever.
That's right.
Yes. Elise Stefanik. 30-year-old Elise Stefanik.
And already making an impact.
Yeah, you know, our Washington reporter Dan Friedman is going to be watching her first years in office and reporting back to us. And yesterday she voted with the GOP on a package of abortion restrictions that, you know, coincided with the 42nd anniversary of Roe versus Wade. That's when there's traditionally a lot of protests in Washington from people opposed to abortion. And she really aligned with the GOP. But the day before, she was part of a group of about 20 women members of the GOP caucus that spoke with the leadership that convinced them to back off of a more rigid part of their proposal to restrict abortion services, and that is that it would make illegal any abortion past 20 weeks. And there was some debate about whether the exception for rape should be in there, but the rape wouldn't count if, I mean, that wouldn't go if the woman had not reported the rape to authorities, and it got really esoteric. So they did drop that more rigid plank to their bill yesterday to restrict abortion services. But she seems to be lining up with the more conservative sides of the Republican caucus. And I don't think that's a surprise. I think that's consistent with what she said during her campaign in the fall.
Alan?
No opinion here.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
I'm just checking to see if you're still with us there.
As our constant commenter Tony says, what do you expect? She is going to be a star in this conservative Republican Congress, and people voted for her. She offered herself against her opponent, who wasn't that strong. And now what happens when people get elected is they always say, I have a mandate. I don't think she has a mandate. And I think on some of the stuff like the abortion stuff and other things, she's just not where she should be. But that's what I think. Let's see what her constituents say.
We will see. All right. So on to other issues and other topics that we want to talk about. And let's go. Well, King Abdullah is dead. We do want to mention that. Certainly a force in Saudi Arabia dies at the age of 90, came to the throne in old age and earned a reputation as a cautious reformer, even as the Arab Spring revolts toppled heads of state and Islamic State militants threatened the Muslim establishment that he represented. He died on Friday, according to a statement on state television. He was 90 years old. What impact do you think this will have, Alan, on of course, our relations and just with the Saudis in general?
Well, I don't think there's going to be any substantial change with our relationship with them. But when you look at that country and you look at all our rhetoric about pro-democracy and pro-human rights, and you see guys getting 50 lashes or 50 whippings in the town square, and women not being allowed to drive cars. It's astounding that we still see them as best friends. Now, you see what the payoff is. It is clear that we are so angry at Putin that the Saudis have decided to put all the oil out there and basically drive Putin underground because his oil resources and his money that he gets from oil are gone. So we're getting something back for it. But the question is it worth it?
It's always been an awkward relationship with Saudi Arabia just because of the rigidness of their culture and the inconsistency between theirs and the freedom that we experience. You know, enjoy in the United States.
And another issue is the huge revolution that we're reading about in Yemen, right? And Yemen and Saudi Arabia, if I'm not wrong, share a huge border. And these people know that they have lots of potential problems, the Saudis, and they are not going to brook any kind of interference from the United States, never have.
That was actually going to be our next story that we're going to talk about. It was about Yemen, and obviously the news coming out of Yemen is the president and the cabinet resign. And now, obviously, deepening turmoil for a key U.S. ally, according to the story in The Washington Post. The president has succumbed to an apparent coup attempt by the rebels. That was confirmed by a government official, and the crisis threatens to weaken Washington's campaign against al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is based in Yemen and has actively targeted the United States and Europe. So this seems as it's a very, as we have been talking about in this program over the past week, about the situation in Yemen, actually for the last week, very disturbing.
Well, it is, and once more it shows where the United States is in that mess, in that part of the country, right? So what do we do now? there will be those who say boots on the ground, which would be the last thing we should do. And you know, it's if you're sitting here and you're a citizen of this country, you scratch your head, and you have very few options. You can send your CIA in. Obviously, they were there already. You can give them the resources you need. Obviously, we've been trying to do that, but it hasn't helped. So it's really, we're really in a bad spot.
Well, the rebels, the Houthis, as they're called, are opposed to the Al-Qaeda group themselves, and the U.S. is opposed to Al-Qaeda. So there may be some opportunity for this new rebel group that pushed out our favorable president in Yemen to have some common ground with the United States, which just, you know, illustrates how complicated all these things are.
Well, how favorable a president could he have been for the U.S. if Al-Qaeda in Iraq has been running rampant for all these years?
Well, he was an ally. He was.
Yes,
he was,
I know, right, but right, not a very effective one.
No, that's
that could
right,
be,
Ray.
Yes, incompetent, that's but, right. but are on our side.
Favorable, but weak. right.
He got out quick, and, too. I mean, he didn't.
And
he didn't
I want to remind you all that Osama bin Laden, remember him? He was once our ally. That's right. We were giving him weapons. So now, who knows if who these guys are, and if you give them weapons, whether they turn into madmen too?
everything okay there?
Yeah. Hearing
all kinds of sirens.
Suddenly, it's an episode of Dragnet.
There's been a crime scene outside the
like
studio.
Dragnet.
I love Dragnet. Bum-ba-dum-bum. Okay, we're going to have Megan Finnegan come in just a few minutes to give us a lockbox update. But before we do that, we have to end every episode of the program this week talking about Deflategate.
Oh. Here we go again.
The reason, this most recent reason, is because both the coach, both the coach of the New England Patriots and the quarterback, their star quarterback, Tom Brady, took to press conferences and spoke out against the about the charges and spoke about what they knew and said absolutely nothing.
No. Surprise. But in saying nothing, Belichick said more than he's ever said before.
He actually 8 minutes.
Yeah.
He went 8 minutes without actually
nothing.
Saying something.
Complete sentences. Amazing.
It was pretty
good.
Do
you think there's any relationship between the Shelly Silver story, which we started with, and the coach of the Pats story? Because, you know, people support these guys. Look, there are people on our panel who are Pats fans, right, Joe? And they and my son, who I'd do anything for. But they seem to cast a blind eye on this guy's antics.
Joe has not been casting a blind eye on this. He's sickened by this. And he said so exactly yesterday.
Yeah, I did.
Well, I apologize.
Yeah, you should.
my whole I am interested in this story because you make the connection to the silver story, and the one of the connections is that okay, well, they're asking should Silver step down, and the question is should the NFL intervene and say they shouldn't play in the Super Bowl? Should Tom Brady be benched for the Super Bowl? Should Bill Belichick be benched for the Super Bowl? All of these questions. I am one of the things that the backlash to this that I find really surprising. One is that the NFL has not done something sooner to sort of put it to bed,
it
to rest.
There's much too much money. The programs are printed. Everything else, all the machinery is
no,
under,
but to shut down
in-
the shut down the controversy. Say, look, we found this. We're going to do this, and this, and
have
move
a
on.
Committee after the Super Bowl. That's what they'll
right.
do.
Right. Well, why don't they just do that now?
You know why?
Well, I think Ray just said it. Yeah, money, money.
No, but I mean, I'm saying to protect the money and to move on to the Super Bowl, that the NFL should still come out. I guess they've said that they're going to hopefully have some resolution today. Am I right on that?
So, Michael, Michael, well, our Michael too, writer says, wouldn't a deflated ball benefit both teams? Well, that's not the point.
No,
right?
No, I think there's an answer to that, Ray. You were going to say,
They don't use the same ones. They each have 12, and the only reason as I understand it, the Colts even knew about this, was they intercepted a ball, and their defensive players said, hey.
Well, there's not much air in that ball.
Yeah.
Which makes the comments of the of a quarterback, Tom Brady, yesterday all the more concerning, because he said, I didn't notice. And it's hard to believe that a man who has spent his entire life since he was 5 years old with a football in his hand wouldn't notice if there was a deflation by a pound and a half of air.
Here's how you don't notice. If every game you've played for the last 15 years, the ball is 1 PSI less than it should be because you've said to the ball boy, hey,
keep it on the light side.
Keep it on the light side. And every game, no, you're not going to notice because every game is the same.
But these balls are also then checked by the officials. They're said to be okay, right?
Yeah, well, I'm sick of this.
I know you're sick of it, but I want to get to our letter writer. Wouldn't a deflated ball benefit both teams? Yes, if that was the rule. But it wasn't the rule. It was one group doing the deflated ball and making it for themselves. Now you want to change the rule and make a deflated ball for everybody. That's
well,
different,
no,
right?
Well, no. I mean, what Ray was saying is the answer is that the Patriots play with their
when they're on the offense, they have their own.
Just
ball.
Don't say the Patriots ball, play
with their own footballs.
Yeah, okay. And the Colts
and play with their own footballs. Right. So it doesn't benefit them.
Call me Ishmael, but the fact is that they're making their own rule. There's an NFL rule about how much air should be in the ball, right?
Yes. Well, they're not making their own rule. They're violating. Apparently, once the footballs go 2 hours and 15 minutes prior to game time, they go into a lockdown mode.
Correct.
Say that the game balls have been cleared by the officiating teams. And then at that point, they say, all right. You know, these are okay to play.
And that's when G. Gordon Liddy sprang into action.
And that's when something very weird happens.
Okay,
look
who's here.
It's just too easy to have fun with this story.
Absolutely. You can't not
things.
Have fun. All right. Speaking of fun, Lockbox, we have 1 minute, and Megan Finnegan is here and is going to tell us the glorious news.
All right. We've got $381,223
in Lockbox. And we want to get to...
Well,
we have to get to 500,000. If we don't get there, we're going to lose. We're going to threaten. We have a wonderful match. No, it's true. We have a wonderful match from the Berkshire Bank. They said, if you do this, we'll give you $10,000. Which among us who are listening to this radio station want to lose $10,000? Not me.
So that's our match if we hit 500,000 before the fund drive begins, to be clear?
That's right.
Okay.
And we need about 119, something like that, right?
10-4.
That's pretty quick with the math.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So this is all good news. We can do this over the weekend. And
we have to.
Yep.
Absolutely have to.
Go online.
Failure is unthinkable.
All right. We'll leave it there. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. Megan, thank you very much. Michael, Ray, Alan, thank you very much. We'll be back after this.